Welcome to We Knows Parenting. I'm Peter McNerney.
And I'm Beth Newell.
We are still married. We still have children. They are 2 and 4, Brennan and Maven. And we're surviving this week, though. I will say we've had some challenges.
It's a little rough week. Bryn is really turning up the tantrums. He doesn't want to go places or come back from places.
Oh, it was going so great. And then he just decided, nope. If you say, all right, put on your shoes, it's a little different. He'll freeze and look at you, and he knows what he's getting into immediately. Because if he doesn't do it, eventually it's going to turn into me, like, forcing him out the door and picking up and screaming. So we had a lot of days of screaming, and it was a little emotionally taxing.
I had a kicking and screaming day getting them to daycare the other morning, and Bryn was so bad that I had to carry Maven like down the street, put her in the car, come back, get him, put him in the car, tell him that we were just going to take Maven to daycare and not him, and he was like, oh, okay, I'll come along for the ride, and then I had to bring him into daycare screaming. And I ran into our downstairs elderly neighbor 2 days later. Mm-hmm. And she said, I saw you having a really hard time with your kids the other morning. She was watching out the window. Yeah. And she goes, I stayed home with my daughter until she was 7 years old, and I hated it. And she was like, it was really bad. And then I was like complaining to her a little bit. And then she goes, but I just want you to know, somebody cares. And then I went and got into the car and burst into tears because it was so emotional. I was like,
life affirming.
It was life affirming, and also like it was like a weird, it felt almost like sad to know that this woman, you know, 30 years ago, she had to stay home for 7 whole years. Like, I was just like, this is, yeah, this poor woman. Anyway.
Well, yeah, I had to carry both of them at one point because he wouldn't walk. I had to carry Maven. So I went and got groceries and then picked them up. And then the one time Bryn decided to walk, Maven said she wasn't going to walk unless I carried
her.
That's
what she kept doing to me. Or I would grab him finally and be fighting him like tooth and nail, and I'd be like, okay, come on, Maven. And then she would be like, carry me.
I had to carry her and two to the brim filled grocery bags. And it was a miracle show of strength. Because
what a disaster.
I'm amazing.
Also, Bryn last night, he had this epic tantrum where he was throwing books everywhere. And then I asked him, he like finally calmed down later and had eaten some food, and I was trying to get him to clean up the books, and he'd pick up like 2 books, and then he'd be like, I'm tired. I'm really sweaty. But he was sweaty from having an hour-long tantrum, and I was...
It's like, this book picking up is too much, too rich for my blood.
I was like, I'm also sweaty because I had been physically restraining him for half an hour.
So... part of the challenge this week, so I have been basically, despite what I have learned from this very podcast, threatening him with punishment because I'm just so angry and I don't know what to do. And my big threat is no TV. And he's like, no. So I go, okay, no TV. And so it's happened twice this week where I said, there's going to be no TV. And I pick him up. And then when I pick him up, he's perfectly calm. And I was like, you remember this morning, right? You said no to daddy a lot, and I needed your help. I said, you need to walk, and you kept saying no. And remember what I said? And he's like, no TV. I'm like, yeah. He goes, maybe a little TV? I'm like, nope. He goes, okay. And then we had the most pleasant night ever, where we pulled out a bunch of cards, and he's a master of puzzles, and we learned how to play memory, and he's like finally figured out that game, and he loves it, and it was really calm, and bedtime was so easy.
Yeah, I mean, I do think some of this is just the circumstances of this week, but also I think they both got attention starved because we had such a crazy work week, and neither of us was like giving them 100% attention mm-hmm. all the time.
Well, so tonight, like this morning, he did it again. And I said it was no TV after school. So I picked him up. And on the way home, he was like, do you remember this morning? And he was like clearly testing to see if I remember. And I was like, do you mean when you were saying no to daddy? And I said no TV. And he's like, yeah, you remember that? I was like, yep. He goes, okay. We watched TV? And I was like, no, not tonight. And he's like, yeah, I guess I was a bad boy, huh? Am I a bad boy? And I go, and I was like, that's very triggering to that. I'm like, I don't want him to think of himself that way. So I was like, no. You are a very, very good boy.
You're just being very bad.
And I was just like, you have some things that you're learning.
We're learning how to help daddy. I forgot to say, the origin of the hour-long tantrum we experienced was because I was driving them home from daycare. I was going to take them out to dinner to, you know, go easy on myself. And then he said he didn't want to go to Smashburger. He wanted to go straight to the frozen yogurt place.
And By the way, if you listen to this podcast, you should know that we only ever eat a Smashburger.
Anyway, so I was actually tired enough to think, you know, they're not going to eat anything that healthy either way. So maybe I will just let them eat frozen yogurt now and then figure out something later.
No.
So I asked him in the car, I said, when we get to Cherry Tree, will you come in the bathroom with me? Because I had to pee. And I was like, I'm not going to leave him out there to put his hands on all the toppings. And he...
That's exactly what he would do.
So he kept saying, no, I'm not going to come in the bathroom. I'm too scared. I can't come in the bathroom with you. I was like, well, we're not going there if you don't come in the bathroom with me. And so he just kept insisting and he wouldn't let it go. I was like, okay, so we're not going. Drove home. He freaked out. He's screaming, I don't want to be here. Stop, you know.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Well, so he clearly now, he's pitting us against each other because he knows that he can get away. He can talk you into more things.
He's pitting us against each other. He's just testing the fences wherever he
right.
can.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. Like he knows there was no TV tonight and he was like, oh, okay, that's fine. Here, and then you went in the bedroom, started turn on the TV for yourself, and then something clicked in his mind. He was like, oh, maybe this has not been decided. And then he started doing this, daddy, go over there. And then he kept going over you, and you have a video of him going, let's watch TV, mommy. Let's watch what I want to watch. And you're like, daddy said no TV. And it's like, daddy doesn't need to know. And then he started to freak out a little bit. But we had a good bedtime otherwise.
Maven is also learning to tantrum a little bit more, fight us more. And she's
a lot of pushing.
And she turns to Bryn and goes, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to mommy. I'm not talking to you. It's so funny.
She's getting real sassy.
So sassy.
I'm not talking to you. Oh, I had a victory. So, you know, when they're two... You know, these are pretty classic kid fights, little kids. They either have these totally arbitrary fights that are my mommy. And it's just conflict for conflict's sake. And the other one they do is just they go, Then the other one goes, And then Maven bursts into tears. And I'm like, this is not a problem. This is fake. And so Maven went, And Bryn goes, daddy, Maven said to me. And I was like, well, Bryn, do you know what means? He's like, no. And I was like, that actually means I love you. And his eyes lit up. And he's like, what? Like, I told him a secret. And so then Maven was upset. And he goes, hey, Maven. And he wanted to tell Maven. Hey, Maven. Hey, Maven. And then Maven looks at him and goes, And then Bryn looks at her and just goes, I love you too, Maven. Like, so slyly. And I was like, this is great. Because we're diffusing the problem.
Another thing that's happening this week is since starting preschool, I think Bryn has attained a new level of potty humor.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me last night that milk is white pee. So I'm really impressed. He also learned some kind
what?
Of...
What? Did he explain it?
No, but then afterwards he sang some kind of song that was like chocolate, chocolate. Like it was like a poop song. And
he's in He's got friends now.
Apparently. I think maybe one of the kids was doing a song about like chocolate milk is poop, or I don't know.
Milk lemonade, around the corner fudge is made.
It was something like that, but it was not that one. It was not the classic milk lemonade that we're all familiar with.
The classic milk lemonade. Yeah, he comes in, he's like, something about my butt. And we, being the mature adults we are, laugh hysterically. And then he scolds me and he's like, Daddy, butt is a bathroom word. he gets the laugh and then he's like, you're above this, Daddy. Come on. You're better than this.
Another thing is they were, they wanted me to draw things for them on the MagnaDoodle thing last night before bed. So we're laying in bed and I was drawing like animals, and then they were like, draw poop. So I drew like a turd, and then they both were like, and then he goes, draw pee. So then I made the turd in like a puddle of pee, and they were going crazy.
We are really asking for it.
I think it's better. I appreciate the people at school defining potty language as inappropriate, but I also don't want to make it too forbidden.
What's the thing is like, the way I know that when I have them and we're alone, they know that there's certain rules that I have. And like, I don't give them as many extra snacks and stuff. And so they don't bother me about it when it's just me. So that gives me, like, I worry that, oh, if we condone poop and pee stuff at home, they're going to think that's okay. But he's smart enough to understand the context that he's in. He goes to school and it's a different set of rules. That's what he explains it to us. Like, basically, we don't do this at school, but will you laugh at my fart joke, Daddy? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to laugh. I'm laughing right now because it's funny.
This next segment is called Did You Knows? It's where we discuss parenting related facts and information.
So, this one's about neuroscience. This is about your brain. I love this stuff. And so let me dive right in. So by age 4, the cortex in your brain begins operating at an adult activity levels. By 4, a child's brain is more than twice as active as an adult's. The brain continues to consume glucose at a feverish pitch through age 10 and then slows down until about age 16 when it levels off at adult levels. The child's brain burns much more glucose than adult's brain because it must maintain trillions of connections between neurons, more than twice as many as ultimately retained into adulthood. So initially, the brain provides too many connections in the cerebral cortex. Then there's a waiting period to decide, essentially, which ones you want to keep into adulthood. These connections represent potential pathways that an electrical impulse may travel. Connections are strengthened by repetition, and those that are not used become vulnerable to elimination. So essentially, you know, whenever you build a memory or you have an experience, you're literally creating sort of these neural pathways connecting different parts of your brain, where there's like certain hand-eye coordination part of your brain to visual information. It also connects to other sensory memories. And the more you do a thing, the more those neurons are activated. And it's literally a physical path in your brain that you are building. It's not an abstract thing. And so when you're a kid, you just basically have twice as many options, and they're basically like, all right, what are we working with? What's going to be necessary for you? And once you get it to about 16, they're set. So where this is, you see, like, most applicable is like learning languages. When you're little, you absorb it so much more, or musical instruments. Like, what seems crazy to me is I started Spanish, my Spanish class. I took like 7 years of Spanish, but I started when I was 12. And yeah, reading this, like, I don't know anything
until middle school. This is also why I feel like they didn't give us a chance of being good at music as well in school. Like, or my parents didn't put me in any kind of like music classes either. So I just want to say it's not my fault that I'm terrible at languages and music.
It's really not. There is more in this article that says that in in instances, I don't know how many instances there are, of like finding like feral children in the wilderness, if they're not exposed to language, like, I mean, I don't want to hear what this story is, but apparently there have been examples where children are then reintegrated into society or integrated into society past age 10, and they can't really develop language because they've had, they haven't built those pathways before then. They've also shown, like, in cats, if they cover cats' eyes for a certain period of time during their development and then take the blindfold off, the cats have all the parts to see, but they can't see because they haven't developed the connectivity between the meaning and the visual information. So they're essentially blind.
There's a really famous story of this feral boy who was found in France in like the 1800s or something. And one thing that I always remember of the story of the people who were watching him was that they brought him into this home, and apparently in France, in this time period, people would boil apples as like food, and he would just reach into a boiling pot of water and like grab an apple to eat it, and he didn't like no part of him reacted to it. I think it was like, you know, partly like learned, but I think also just living in the elements, like the shock of certain things was just sort of like not affecting him the same way.
That's very weird.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
But it,
also, why are you boiling apples?
Yeah. Wait, you have an oral allergy to raw apples. Boiling apples makes you able to eat them.
I also,
you'd be the one person to understand.
French ancestry.
Yeah. So. You're also French. You're the Frenchiest person in this room.
Going back to what you were originally talking about, though, I have to say this article made me very jealous of children's brain capacity to burn glucose.
Yeah, that's what I pulled from it. I was like, so jealous of that glucose, like,
is
burning.
Is that where it's all going, all the food they're eating?
To your brain. I mean, a big chunk of it. I have no idea how much. But yeah, I mean, it's a very simple argument for education in all forms. Exposing your children to experiences,
specifically, sort of like
sports
exposure to things versus like education. Like,
yeah, I started playing hockey when I was 4, and like that sort of specific hand-eye coordination in skating,
such a useful skill to have as an adult.
But like, I haven't, you know, I haven't played hockey in 20 years. But when I put on skates, suddenly I'm like, none of that goes away. You know, I can pick up a trumpet or trombone, and I'll remind, all there. Like,
the point is, you are an amazing athlete and musician.
I'm so great. You don't give me enough athletic credit. I was captain of the JV football team and the JV hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
And then I quit for theater. But yeah, I had piano lessons when I was in second grade. I wish I had started earlier. But yeah, a lot of schools, like, you start your musical instrument in a formal band at school was fifth grade for me. That's like right when the benefit of this is over and languages.
You know what's funny about this is when I did have piano lessons around age, like, I don't know, 11 or something. Mm-hmm. And I was like okay at it, but like you're saying, it's like kind of late to like become a pro or anything. But my mom had this idea that like by paying for me to get piano lessons, I could teach her piano and she would learn. And I remember sitting down with her and teaching her like a very simple like key plucking thing.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, I think I've got that. And then I was like, okay, so now we're going to add in the other hand. And she was like, oh, we have to do the other hand too. And it was like,
he's like, oh, daughter, I don't want
she
to.
Just, like, within one session, she was like, this is hard. And it really was like this thing of like, you can't teach a, I don't know, 30, 40 something woman.
It's super hard.
It's hard. I mean, it's doable. It's just a lot more work.
Oh my God. No phones. This, you know what?
I have to say about tonight is that you were not letting Bryn watch TV, and then I was like, well, maybe we could let him watch Mary Poppins because I would actually enjoy watching that. And then you were like, no, no, no. I said no TV. And then you said, we can play video games.
I did not say that.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not.
Yes, you did. You what? Said, Bryn, do you want to play video games?
I did not say that. Not even you close.
Did. Yes, you did.
Not, no. Yes, you heard that, but I'll tell you.
I said, I was going to say. We literally argued about it, and then I said, oh, video games are okay? And you were like, yeah, that's different. That's something I want to do, not him.
Oh, no, 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 no. I thought you were saying I'm not allowed to play video games after they go to bed.
You asked him if you wanted to play video games.
I didn't think. No, no, no. I said you want to play another game because we had done memory. Oh, no, no, no. I am adamant. No screens because it was so nice. No screens at all. No. Oh, boy. That's another thing. I feel it in myself that, like, the impulse to pick up my phone is so strong, and it is now hardwired in my head. And, like, every 60 seconds, I'm like, do I need to look at my phone? If you are, you know, 4 to 10 years old and you start getting used to having that phone in your hand, that's going to be so much more literally hardwired into your head that this is a thing I need to go to. And that truly terrifies me.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't want to give them phones and iPads right now because it makes them act crazy. Yeah, I mean, but I on the flip side, I don't think 17. I don't think you should fully isolate your kids technologically from things. Like, you let them learn. Like, you don't need to make them the weird kid who doesn't understand how technology works.
I mean, there's technology all over this house. Okay. I just don't want them to have a smartphone in their pocket until
I just don't
58.
Like the villainization of technology. It's like this weird, like, Puritan attitude. Like,
it's not all technology. It's smartphones. It's interactive touch. That is literally doing this. That is literally rewiring moment to moment impulses throughout your whole day.
I get that, but then people start to extend it to TV, and they're like never letting their kids get any screen time, and it's just like this whole prison that moms are supposed to never think about anything but entertaining their kids, and it's like, let's relax a little bit.
Well, obviously I don't have a huge thing against TV. I just use it as a threat. But I will say, this week, those two nights of no TV were much more pleasant for me. And
yeah,
I was
well,
like,
because
my
we
mom,
should have some nights of no TV. I agree with that.
We have had virtually zero. And my mom, you know, growing up, as I may have mentioned, I was not allowed to watch TV on school days. So after school on Friday.
Now you're weird.
But now I get it. I mean, I watched so much TV on the weekends. I caught up. I was more.
Yeah, but then you like didn't know what Seinfeld was.
Yeah, and then I got the privilege of watching every single season over a month as an adult. And it
yeah,
was
and
heaven.
Then you were like, hey, this show is good. Ever heard of
hey,
it?
You guys heard this Seinfeld show? He observes a lot of funny things. Ba-doo, ba-doo, ba-pow. Yeah. But I get it. Like, I asked my mom about it. And I was like, "What? Because she's not like a strict person at all. But I was like, why'd you make this choice? And her explanation was like, oh, honestly, it's just easier for me. And you'd think it'd be the opposite. Like, TV makes things easier. But this week, I totally saw it. The night that we had no TV, we played a little together, but they also entertained themselves for longer stretches of time. They weren't as antsy. They calmed. Bedtime was really easy. Because it wasn't that, like, taking the TV away. And I was like, this is easier. So I like it. I also thought about thinking about entertainment-themed nights because Bryn loves days. He's like, Monday is this. And I was like, maybe it's Monday night is movie night. TV, like, Tuesday is no TV day.
I was thinking we could, in the spirit of trying to, like, get more things done and have a healthier, less takeout full lifestyle, we could do more like cooking with them or baking with them or like arts and crafts things.
Let's try a week where we have themed nights and then TV becomes an exciting thing that we do together.
I just
or
think
we just let them
you
do
know,
all day Saturday
you don't
Sunday.
Know sometimes at the end of the day if you're gonna have the energy to do certain things.
Well, the surprising thing for me was that it took less energy for me on the night where there was no TV.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I'll try to make dinner, and then they're like, "Mommy, mommy."
Well, they do that to me too, but I find when the TV is on, it's worse. Well, we're gonna play with this, and we'll report back. Nation, that's pretentious.
The We Knows Nation.
The We Knows Nation. Oh boy! All right, I'm gonna keep saying that. The We Knows Army.
There's like so many of them.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We love you all.
This next segment is called We Knows Listeners. We've got...
What? That's not what it's called.
What's it called?
Listeners Wanna Knows.
It's called Listeners Wanna Knows. Listen, guys, we're tired. This next segment is called We Knows Listeners.
We Knows Listeners. If there's one thing we knows, it's listeners.
Listeners Wanna Knows. We've got a recording to play for you guys. It is going to play right now.
Hi, my name's Grace. I am 19 years old, and I'm from Mississippi, and yes, everything you've heard about Mississippi is true. It really sucks, but I've lived here my whole life, so I've tried to make the best of it. First of all, I just really want to say that I enjoy every second that I get to listen to you guys' podcast. I know that you have discussed that it's kind of weird for those that don't have kids or, you know, kind of don't want kids to listen to your podcast. But I genuinely enjoy it. I love hearing about Bryn and Maven and you guys' daily lives. But it's a good break from college life and stress and everything that goes on in my life. So I just want to thank you guys for that, like, from the bottom of my heart, because it genuinely makes me super happy. So my kind of hypothetical question, which you guys have kind of went into detail already, this might be more of an issue for those that live in Mississippi, and seeing that you guys are from an area that's much more progressive, you might not face this issue, but I feel like it's important to discuss. How would you feel if either Bryn or Maven were in an interracial relationship? Being from Mississippi and being in an interracial relationship, I face a lot of racism from close family, like my mom and dad and everything. So that was really, really hard for me growing up, and it really drove me away from having a relationship with my parents when they showed their true colors. So basically my question is, how would you guys support your children if they chose to do that? Because most of the time it's not the people in your family who are opposed to it, it's just people in everyday life. They give you dirty looks, they see you differently, they judge you differently. How would you guys approach discussing that with your kids, and how would you guys, how would y'all kind of make sure that they know that that's okay and they're not doing anything wrong, but at the same time kind of protect your kids from having to deal with anything dangerous that comes with racist people in the everyday world? Thank you again for your podcast, and I hope to hear from y'all. Bye.
Wow, Grace. That's, I'm sorry you've dealt with that. That sounds really stressful.
I love Grace, from that. So much to unpack, from all of that. And first I want to start by saying I've been to Mississippi several times and, I've loved my trips to Mississippi.
Go ahead and do the impression of the little kid you saw.
Oh, no. That was not in Mississippi. That kid was in Kentucky. The kid who goes, "Oh, this book's great because I can take this to school." But no, I've been to Oxford, Mississippi a few times, and my cousin used to work down there. The key to loving any place you go, and obviously any state, like... there's awesome and shitty parts of it. Yes, it's being white. No... I went on a bunch of tours through Story Pirates, and we connected through independent bookstore owners. Independent bookstore owners are universally wonderful people. They're like very open-minded and welcoming. And so I have such warm connection to Mississippi, not the point of the voicemail. But
anyway, it's hard to sort of translate this to Bryn and Maven because they live in New York, outside of New York City. They've already had plenty of interracial friendships and nannies and daycare work. You know, like, so it's not like, I don't think them or us would find that very weird, or and I don't think they would get the same amount of flack for it in their day-to-day lives as you might get in Mississippi, but maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's hard to relate to because we are all in our own certain bubbles.
Obviously, it's not like that nothing happens here in New York. I know interracial couples get comments walking down the street and stuff. It's not like,
yeah,
it's not nothing.
But you're in New York City, you get on the train and you're there with people from all over the world and you're sitting next to a drag queen and
you wish you were sitting next to a drag queen.
I just want to be friends with a drag queen.
You really?
But you don't look twice because you see everyone. And that's the argument.
But anyway, look, for the purpose of this, let's try to put ourselves in Grace's shoes, which is in Mississippi, where people are being openly hostile to the idea. I think ideally, you're just there for your kids. And on the one hand, I think treat their partner or their friends or whoever very normally. On the other hand, you sort of acknowledge the extremity of the situation and you let them voice their pain about it or voice their pain about what their partner is struggling with in their day-to-day life. You know, it's like a hard... That's where I think this sort of like well-intentioned white liberal sometimes misses the point is they fall into the sort of like, I don't see color zone.
Yeah,
we've
talked about that. Yeah, and I think the... where some people overcompensate in the other direction is even people who feel like, oh, well, I'm not against this, but I want to protect my child who I foresee going out and being judged by other people. And so that like false argument of I'm just trying to protect you, you're getting yourself into, I think that person has a lot of denial about their own biases. But like that, I could see that being an argument for some parents too in their own minds that like you are signing up for ridicule by doing this and you're my child and I don't want you to face that. I think that is misguided and very unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine some people allow themselves to talk themselves into that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's so hard when it's a systemic problem and not really like an individual one. And I think like it's... Ideally, the way your kid encounters race in the world is just that they're always encountering people of different races and that your own workplace is diverse or whatever. Like, it shouldn't be an anomaly in their lives or yours so that you won't treat it as one.
I mean, the short answer is we would be 100% supportive of whomever... I say that now.
We say that now, and I was like, "Well, what if don't say something?
What if,
stupid?
Regardless of the race of this person, they're just like a shitty person?" Of course, the second Maven's like, "I'm dating this boy," part of me is gonna be like, "Who the fuck?"
You're gonna be the parent that is like, "I don't like this one.
I don't like this one." although now, though, if they're not white, I'm gonna be like, "They're great," even if they're not. Just trying not to be that dad. But I think it's the don't try to protect them from that. It's you let them do that and you let them know that you're there for them and that it might be hard, but that's not a reason not to do it, not to be with somebody that they care about. Because there's something, you know, especially if you're in New York City, there's going to be people everywhere that are biased and say shitty things. But, you know, in New York City, you're safe. You know, it's normal where we are. We're an extremely liberal bubble.
Yeah.
But there are places where it is genuinely dangerous. But that's also why it is so important for those people to be exposed to that.
But I think this person is coming up against what I think a lot of people I know are coming up against in the last couple of years, which is, you know, like they thought their parents were one thing and then they're realizing they have these other beliefs or like are not fully supportive of the things that they believe in. And it's like, that's just really hard to like... whether it's race or gay rights or feminism or whatever, to be like, oh, these people that were, their job is to make me feel safe, do not make me feel safe about this issue because they don't care about it.
And it's difficult because obviously it's a relationship that matters. Even if it breaks down and you pull away from those people, like, it's still, it's a relationship of consequence. And I know, I can't really relate to this. All of this is easier said than done. But something like this, like, it's so easy to be like, just don't be racist. We don't know these people. We don't know what they grew up in. So if it's not somebody that you can just totally brush off, what?
Well, I think you have to empathize. I think that's the hard thing a lot of people are struggling with. And I think it sounds like she currently is not interacting with them.
Right. But part of it is that if I was in this situation, I think the healthiest thing I could do for myself is to see those people as like, oh, they have a problem that is their problem that they're dealing with. And on a certain level, I need to empathize with that level of confusion and pain that they're going through. I don't think they're right, and that it's not an easy thing to like learn that lesson.
I mean, ideally, that's the perspective you would have, but like, it's so easy to say that when you don't have that person
exactly.
Like sticking a knife in your gut every time you interact with them. That's
yes,
like,
of course.
I think everyone has to sort of find their own balance of how much they're willing to interact with people who are actively hurting them every time they see them. It's
yeah.
Like you can't
argue into it. And I think you have to just own your choice and let those people know that you don't need to defend your choice to them, and that's what it is, and that's that. And that's going to be, I imagine, this is not a, doesn't sound like this is a solved by any mean issue, but in the long term, I hope that it is something.
I mean, I hope that this person's parents come around a little bit and they can strike some kind of balance, but I don't know how over-optimistic that is because I don't know this person's parents.
But the other part of it is you find your people, you know? She's in college right now. She's 19 years old. When I was 19, that's exactly when I was like, I'm in college. Like, I sort of know some things about what I want to do. I'm finding some people that right. I didn't grow up with. And hopefully by the end of college, I was like, oh, I knew who the kinds of people were that were on my team that had shared my values and I felt safe around.
Yeah,
and that is
and
the process of going
those,
into adulthood.
When you find those people who are not like judging you for who you are or who you love or whatever, you're not like, you're ultimately so much more happier than trying to figure out how to please the people who can't handle you as who you are,
yeah,
who your friends are.
In my experience, college was phase one of, you know, you grow up with the people you grow up with, and like you have successes and failures and challenges within that, but you're stuck with those people for better or for worse. College is the first attempt where you get to sort of
stuck with them.
You know what I mean? Like, you have a limit. It's normal.
You're talking about like regular people though, like not people with like serious mental health issues or abuse
yes.
issues, or there's like any number of reasons why you should cut people out of your life.
Oh yeah. No. I'm not saying you can't do anything about it at any level. But in general, like when you go through school and you grow up in a neighborhood, you're in a certain social bubble and it's static and it's normal to you. And it doesn't even really occur to you that this is something you can change in a large way. But when you go to college, it's such a clean slate where you get, you're like, oh, who are my friends? I'm starting sort of with zero. And it's a first relation for me that's sort of like you get to pick your people. And you mean,
it's,
you also feel totally
though.
Alone, like nobody loves you from time to time.
It's not.
And then you graduate and you get to try it again. And so like for me, college was the training, not just education, but how to be an adult and how to build your own new networks that are healthy for you is what I mean. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Although you had a weird college experience because you went to art school in New York City, and so you were building your comedy network of people at the same time as college. It was
I
like the same place.
I had a weird college experience for a lot of reasons.
Yeah, because you started dating me during
it.
Well, you started dating some graduated creep when you were 20 years old.
Yeah.
Boy, it was only on our first date I realized you couldn't go to a bar.
So we just went to your place.
I could go to bars. I just couldn't go to that one that Carr did.
Oh, so you just said, I have wine at my house. Come on, let's go. And I was like, okay.
You were like, yeah, I'm a creep. Okay, come on.
Oh, I'm a creep. Do you like creeps? I'm going to be bald soon. Well, Grace, we gave you no definitive answers in there other than, yeah, no judgment from us. And fucking go for it.
I hope you're happy with whoever you're dating and you're finding a community of people who treat you with the love and respect you deserve. Yeah.
And go to that great bookstore in Oxford, Mississippi. I did a show in the courthouse in the center square and I bought a belt there. So I love Mississippi based on that alone. And visit New York and meet a drag queen. Okay, we got another message. This one came to us via Facebook. And this is in response to something that's been an ongoing conversation about by us, from us, through our mouths talking, is about chores, compensation, punishment, reward. And Christine posted on Facebook something I thought was really interesting, and it's so simple, but I never actually thought about it this way. She wrote, I did not pay my kids for chores because they will never get paid to do them when they move out. I did pay my kids for grades starting in middle school, junior high. If they typically get 7 or 8 semester grades, then I paid $10 for an A, $5 for a B, $0 for a C, and any class with a D or below cleared out all other payments, and then we would have tutoring. If they got all A's, then they get a bonus, a full $100. My kids did really well in school and now go to college with this knowledge that they worked for. Bonus is that they don't have to pay for classes, only books. So
this is not the first feedback we've had about this pay thing, huh? This is really sparking a debate.
Well, here's the thing. My initial impulse to getting paid for grades, without thinking, I was just like, oh, no. That's not. You should just do your homework. But then I thought about it and I was like, that's what the real world is. No one's paying you to pick up your own apartment. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn, as you know.
But the grades thing is also a little problematic in my mind because in my experience, and I think this is especially a millennial experience, you could do so well in school and be told that you're like doing it right and like you figured it out. And it's such a rigid system. And then you get out into the real world and it's not like that at all.
But it's closer. It's like doing a job, getting hired to do a job. You're doing it for money.
I'm schoolwork, not saying you shouldn't pay for grades. I just think, is, I don't know. There's
schoolwork is much closer to a job.
But there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, everyone's going to figure out their own solution. But if you have one kid with a learning disability and another kid not, you can't just be paying per grade. Like there's
obviously it's not.
I'm not sure. If this worked for this person, great. I'm really glad that their kids are doing well. This whole paying kids for chores thing, I think, is like sparking a weird class divide of like people who, one, don't have the money to pay their kids for anything. People who, two, might have a little bit of money, but they're scared to pay their kids for things and set up false hope for the kids for the real world. And then like the other people who are sort of like, oh, yeah, hard work always paid off for me. There's a meritocracy because I'm a wealthy white person. You know, it's just like...
Yes, but there's some simple points in here that I hadn't fully thought of, which is like, one, yeah, it's the taking care of picking up your place is a skill that I didn't have, that wasn't ingrained in me. And my attitude towards it was a like, oh, I just got to do this thing on Sunday so I can get $20. It wasn't, that's what we should do because it's your stuff. It wasn't mine. It was somebody else's responsibility. And as you know, it's not, you know, it's only been a recent thing where I've taken more, you know, full responsibility for our stuff. But then also the other part of it is that like, yeah, you know what? School is like a job because the task is arbitrary. Cleaning up your apartment is essential, But a job is a weird abstract thing, and school is a weird abstract thing. And so it equates to me in a way that I've never thought about before. So I don't know if this is right, but it was a weird, in retrospect, obvious revelation for me.
I appreciate that it's worked for her. I just kind of never want to like endorse the black and white solution to things.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Let's just try a different system with Brynn and Maven. I'm sure that
Let's
won't backfire at all.
Let's just keep switching it up.
All right. All right. So thank you, Christine. We will continue to not know what to do. But I like
We've
your thoughts.
We've almost not figured it out at all.
We've almost begun to know what we don't know. All right. So here's another email. This comes to us from Erika. She wrote at the bottom, you read that in Spanish, didn't you? Yes, I did, Erika.
This comes to us from Erica.
Erica says, so this is in regards to secrets. I'm divorced and I'm a single, still a single mom 5 years now. My ex-husband is remarried and they do tell my daughter to keep secrets from me and call the stepmom mommy. Sorry, I remember that. My ex-husband is remarried, and they do tell my daughter to keep secrets from me and call the stepmom mommy. How did you talk to your kids about this? How do you talk to your kids about this? Boy, I don't know how to read. I'm so sorry, Erika. This has been going on for years. However, my daughter seems to really be having a difficult time with being able to tell me things because she's afraid she'll get in trouble with her dad if she does. It breaks my heart because she's only 7 and I don't care what happens as long as she's safe and happy. Anyway, I look forward to every episode and adore every story. Thank you for sharing. Erika!
I like the question, how did you decide to deal with this? Is really funny because as most things on this podcast, we've just sort of let it happen and we have no control over it. I think the thing is, having a 2 and a 4-year-old, it's like, I think the best thing to do right now is to just try to let this secrets thing blow over and not make much of it.
Oh yeah, I don't do any secrets. I'm like, if you don't want him to tell them something, just don't talk about it, because he's gonna bounce back everything that's in his head.
Yeah, so we'll just try to not make secrets a thing. We'll see how that goes. But as in terms of older kids, I don't have good answers for you. I think it sounds very annoying that your ex-husband would tell your daughter to keep secrets, because what are they doing that's worthy of secrets? But also, I love that you have such a relaxed attitude about it and you're just glad she's safe.
Yeah, well, I think I do not think it's cool that anyone is putting ideas into your daughter's head that, like, this is secrets for us and you shouldn't tell that. That's a stress that it's not fair to put on a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
However, all you can do about it is show your daughter that you are not upset by it. You know, and that it's that you don't expect things from her.
Well, I think the big concern with most people with this whole secrets thing is that if we start teaching kids that secrets are okay, this is opening them up to things like molestation. And this is something that child abusers, they specifically groom kids with this and test them out by asking them to keep secrets. And they do these sort of tests of like the workability of these kids to be abused, and they work their way into it. So I think with a child of this age, I do think you need to say on some level that, you know, you can't keep secrets from me if someone's hurting you. You can't keep secrets from me if someone's touching you, et cetera, et cetera. And just lay that out very clearly, probably many times, because kids are dumb. But
that is super important to be like, that sort of thing cannot be a secret. But on top of that, I think it's important in this situation for that child to not feel like they have parents who are putting all the pressure on her to keep a lot lighter. So I think she has to be like, listen, important things that put people in danger cannot be secrets. But just know that, like, I am not going to put pressure. If there's things that only you and daddy talk about, I'm fine. Like, don't make that girl feel like she's disappointing your mother. Or the mother's like, you got to tell me. Because then she's torn and she doesn't know what to do. And that is a traumatizing thing.
Right. And maybe like tell her she's allowed to have privacy and like her own relationships. But she's just not allowed to not tell you if someone's doing something wrong.
Do not show her that. Do not make her feel like you're pressuring her into breaking a trust with her father. But then also that don't show her that it hurts you, that there's secrets.
Yeah. I mean, I do think this mom is doing, it sounds like she's doing a really great job of teaching her daughter that it's okay for her to have her own life.
And this is another example of like, of course, we can't relate. We can't possibly know what this feels like. So this very objective and uninformed outside opinion.
Well, also, I think, you know, when it comes to divorce, there's so many different scenarios in terms of the breakdown of the relationship. So everyone sort of has to evaluate their ex-spouse and that person's level of craziness and what they can and can't control.
Yeah. I mean, you have to communicate with that person, but if you are divorced, I assume that there were communication issues to begin with. So we can't begin to relate. That is because ideally you're able to talk to
perfect over here, and we've never fought, and we always communicate everything.
Oh my god!
Very clearly.
If we got divorced, I would go crazy, just wondering what you were saying about me. I already do. I wonder what you say about me to your Facebook group, but I don't go crazy because you're still here.
I mean, I just tell them how great it is. It's so perfect over here.
You know what? If you just lied to me every day about that, enough of my heart would believe you that I wouldn't care. I walked in today and you were like, I was just talking about you with somebody on text. And I know that you wouldn't tell me what it was. So I was just like, my first reaction was, they were saying how great I am.
I would have told you. You didn't ask. I wasn't like...
What were you talking about me?
I'll tell you later. It's like, it's not something... It's not worth discussing right now. It's too boring.
Now I feel great. Cool. Well, Erika, boy, we don't know, but you sound like a thoughtful
together
lady. We
should change
the
podcast to We Don't Know.
We totally should. We're the dumbest podcast.
Rebranding.
That's going to do it for this week's We Knows Parenting. If you'd like to reach out, talk to us, you can send us an email with your questions, your stories. Give us advice. If you have a weird parenting hypothetical for our Would You Knows segment,
please take us to task. We love it. It's great.
We got some heavy questions this week. I like it.
You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at We Knows Pod. You can go to our website, weknowsparenting.com. We've got t-shirts there. We've got all the information for how to contact us. You can please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. It helps us out a lot.
Please. All I do is refresh it all day long.
Please.
I need validation. It's my love language. Our email is weknowspod@gmail.com. Or leave us a voicemail, 347-384-7396. I am a robot now. Goodbye. Is that dumb?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.